Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Gentlemen, welcome everybody to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Don't worry, it's only a drug and the effects will wear off momentarily. My very special guest is Rick Simpson coming at us live and chortling. Welcome to the show, Matt. PhoenixTears.ca.
Great to be back with you, Vinny. Always a pleasure, brother.
Hey, I want to just jump straight in here, Rick. What was it? Weren't there a couple of states in the USA that have just legalized pot, like in the last month or two?
Yeah, in Colorado and what was the other one? Colorado, for sure. They've made some massive changes there.
You know, it was Washington.
Maybe it was Washington. I'm not just sure of the second one, but Colorado was definitely one of them. And, yeah, the doors are opening. There's no damn question on this thing. But, you know, the other day, yesterday, there was a segment, the Ricky Lake Show. They had that seven-year-old on there, and Cheryl Schumann was on there. But you almost have to laugh at these Americans, you know, because they can't come out and say, you know, it cured me, because they're all afraid they're going to go to jail for saying it. You know, but not once did they mention that, you know, that this child was cancer-free. And, you know, I was kind of disgusted after watching it, you know, but what do you expect from the mainstream media? If you want truth, you got to go to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Yeah, yeah, I do feel that way sometimes. In fact, just as little as yesterday, Rick, I read out all these headlines from the New Zealand mainstream media, and there's nothing of actual national significance in the national news media in New Zealand. Like, right. Seriously, this is a nationally significant news story in New Zealand. A bakery burnt down. A small bakery.
Right. National catastrophe.
A dude has a car accident and goes to hospital. That's national New Zealand news.
Well, it's not much different here in Canada, Vinny. I mean, it's just all distractions, you know. And let's not talk about anything important. Let's just give them all the bullshit we can to distract them. And that's really what
we're under FCC regulations. You can't say that word. You have to say BS instead.
Okay, BS instead.
thank you very much. Thank you very much. BS instead with the gravy on top.
No, but it truly is pathetic what's happening here. And, you know, they're still just dancing around this issue as usual. But you know, I am seeing things happening here. Like I said, you know, there's good things happening in South America. And I was shocked here a while ago. I just found out, from what I understand, Iran is legalizing cannabis. Now, Islam is totally against, you know, like liquor or, you know, narcotics or anything like that. From what I understand, Iran is legalizing. So I was very happy to hear that.
I have an anecdote to actually share with you. The editor of this magazine, Uncensored magazine, my good friend John Eisen, he said that back in the 60s and 70s and stuff like that, a lot of authors actually moved to the Middle East because they were allowed to smoke hashish there.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Well, it's a long-standing tradition in the Middle East. You know, it goes back a few thousand years. But, you know,
how much weekend violence and crime and divorce and all of these other alcohol-related social problems do they have in the Middle East, I wonder?
Well, I'd be willing to bet their marriages are much happier than ours.
Yeah. In fact, I looked after an autistic boy for a Muslim couple, and so very reserved, but very 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 friendly, and just kind of like they never wanted to offend anybody sort of thing, you know, just very right. Conservative.
Yeah, they're very nice people from what I've seen and the people that I've met, you know, from that part of the world. But you know, any place that's you know coming forward and bringing this forward, I'm in favor of it. And but it you know it's just horrifying when you see what's happening in the United States and Canada, and it's no better in Australia and New Zealand. You know, I mean, the people got to get off their asses and say that, like, you know, why don't they just take the real experts on this in this field? You know, Bob Malamud, Lamir Hanoush, Dr. Mishulin. You know, bring them before the public, put them in these big auditoriums and televise it, and let's have a long discussion about what this medicine really does. You know, I don't mind stepping forward and telling the public what I know about it, and I don't think these other experts would mind doing it either. But I mean, we got to clear the you know the they keep muddying the water, you know, and we've got to get the water clear so people can actually see what the hell's going on here.
What I've noticed, Rick, is the power of a phone call. Right, mm-hmm. Studio's about to have somebody on. All of a sudden, he gets a phone call, and that person's no longer on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
and also, you know, thinking about this, like, it would be cool to have a televised. It wouldn't even be a debate. It would just be essentially a series of lectures, bringing the dumbed down, lied to, manipulated, illusionary general public into the knowledge of what cannabis can really do. It reminds me of the third party debate. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't see.
Okay, well, you know how there's generally only two candidates that you ever see as part of a debate? You know, they're either Democrat or Republican.
Right.
Well, they had a third-party debate with all the other people from the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, the Freedom Party, and so on and so forth. And instead of screaming,
fuck! Yeah, there's a lying scumbag! Shut up! There's like eight lies in that one thing that he said.
It's more like,
oh God, this is so awesome, actual debate with real facts, and almost every single one of the candidates wants to legalize pot. Oh.
It was like basking in the radiance of exactly what you wanted to see and wanted to hear, and ironically, this is the first third-party debate that's ever been organized in all of fracking history, and guess what? They had Larry King from Larry King Live,
yeah.
And they couldn't even get that televised.
That's not surprising. Yeah, I mean, well, they're doing anything they could do to try to keep a lid on this, hold it down. But, I mean, it's busting loose in so many different directions now, and there's so many people screaming about this. There's no damn way they're going to hold it back. You know, and these dumb governments, like the government here in Canada, Australia, you know, the U.S., you know, when the people really come to realize what the hell's been done to them, how are the people going to react? And could you blame them if they went and hung every damn one of these fools? I mean, we're being ruled by nothing but psychopathic damn criminals. You know, they're not working for us. So why the hell are we supporting them? And why do we pay our taxes? Why do we do any of this? You know, I don't mind paying taxes, Vinny, and I believe in law and order. But, you know, if my tax dollars are being stolen and actually being used against me, I'll be damned if I'll pay them tax. I've had enough of them.
What I would love, ideally, in terms of a tax system, is voluntary. Okay, so paying taxes is voluntary, and if you do volunteer to pay taxes a portion of your income, kind of like a tithe, you know, to a church, you know, a church doesn't and then they give you a spreadsheet and little tick boxes of what areas you want your tax dollars to go into, You know, and there'll be certain boxes that very few people will tick, you know, like service foreign debt to criminal banks, funding foreign wars, COINTELPRO on people that are trying to free the country. Yeah, I'll fund that, you know. That or healthcare or anything. I reckon that'd be really cool. Like a democratic tax system.
Yes.
But then again, you'd need an educated and informed public in order to operate that. We don't have that yet.
Well, I mean, it's our money and we should have a say as to where it's going to go. You know, we can't trust our elected political representatives. So I think everybody should just get together and say, to hell with you. We're not paying income tax until we see you doing something sensible with this money.
You ask anybody, where do your tax dollars go? You know, how much did you pay in tax? Well, I paid $60,000 in tax. Really? What did they do with that 60 grand? Right. Well, I presume it's on the roads or anything like that. No, bro, that's why they have petrol tax. They don't spend your tax dollars on the roads. Oh, okay. Well, I guess they probably spent it on medicine. Nah, bro, the medicine's all privatized by a bunch of criminal, ruthless, psychopathic pharmaceutical industries, and they just basically bought up everything and lobbied the hell out of everybody in there, and now you've got a mandatory Obamacare and stuff like that. They don't know where your taxes go. Well, where are my taxes going then? Servicing the debt on foreign banks. And that's it. That's what income tax is for. That was why the IRS was created after the Federal Reserve was created. They were created simultaneously. Hey, we're going to have a private cartel issuing the nation's currency, and we need a bunch of slaves to hold it up for us for an extended period of time. How can we find that many willing, stupid slaves who would actually submit to a system like that? Citizens of a democracy! How brilliant!
Well, you know, I hear now, just the other day, I was contacted, I guess, GW Pharmaceuticals in England. They get up on the internet and they come out against me. You know, what an upstanding, wonderful country or company, you know, that it produces, you know, hemp-based medicines, like at about $400 or $500 a gram. No, these are upstanding people. Not much wonder they're criticizing me, the guy who wants to see everybody have it for practically nothing. You know, and of course, GW, I think GW is either, well, I know Bayer distributes their products here in Canada, and probably Bayer owns them. And, you know, they put this big clip thing up on the internet, but they didn't allow any comments. I wonder why. You think they might have got blasted? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Bayer, GW Pharmaceuticals, and a whole damn bunch of them, they can all go to hell. This is a simple damn truth that I've told the public, and whether they like it or not, one of these days, in the near future, they're going to be gone.
I think it's a part of the responsibility of anybody who knows that eventually these people aren't going to be there to simply hasten it. You know, like if you see a boulder that's about to fall off a cliff, kind of thing, just give it a little bit of a nudge.
It's all it needs. But, you know, if we could just get these people, if the people would understand, you know, I don't want violence here. I don't want any big deal like that. Just stand together and look at your politicians and tell them point blank, look, we've had enough of your nonsense. And that goes for the legal systems and everything. Now, if you don't start working for us, you're out of a job and it's going to happen quick. So, I mean, this is what we got to do. We got to take back our world and we need honest representation. And it's more than obvious that we're never going to get it with any of these political parties because they're all corrupted right to the damn core. They've been bought and paid for decades.
I also believe that it won't be possible with a continued centralized government. I mean, I think that centralization is the very antithesis to freedom.
Right. Well, you know, my as far as I'm concerned, I don't even believe in borders, and I don't believe in countries. You know, get rid of the damn borders, and then we could all intermingle, and we'd learn to get along a whole hell of a lot better than we do now, because it would promote understanding. You know, and as a human being, I mean, does anybody have the right to tell you that you can't go live in Siberia? Or in Canada, or anywhere else you want to go? You know, why do they presume that they have that right to tell us? You know, we don't tell a rabbit where to go live, do we? You
know, we do exterminate them if they're living in a place where we don't want them, but yeah.
Yeah. Now, we could make things so much better so quickly, but, you know, my heart goes out mostly, well, I've got a real affection for animals and treating animals and children. You know, and I mean, if an adult is stupid enough to not even look into their own problems and find solutions for themselves, well, that's their problem. But children are different. You know, and as we speak right now, there's children, thousands of children worldwide dying in these damn hospitals, you know, taking chemo and radiation. And these doctors are simply brutalizing these children. Now, I mean, we know what can cure them. Now, it's like I said, now why the hell isn't the medical system using it? And, you know, and this insanity with chemo and radiation, I mean, I don't know. I know how they put it in place, but I don't know how they maintain it. You know, I've said before 1,000 times, you're using cancer-causing treatments to treat cancer. Now, if that's not the definition of insanity, I don't know what the hell is, Vinny.
That's like a patient comes in with a gunshot wound, and so you shoot him in order to make him better?
Yeah. You know? Shoot him again. He'll feel better.
Yeah. Shoot him again. Maybe that'll work.
get a toothache. You'd always take a stick of dynamite and put it in your mouth like a cigar, and I think that'll solve your toothache.
Yeah, yeah. See, I've always thought the bureaucracy of this particular ideology, any institution, you know, I think I really am just anti-establishment in any way, shape, or form. Maybe because I'm not naive enough to think that we actually have an establishment, you know? I mean, look, what defines an establishment? Something that's actually established. What is something that's established? Something that works. And is self-regulating and supports itself and doesn't have problems. None of those parameters are fulfilled with any establishment, right? Yeah. Now, see, the reality is I'm actually pro-establishment, but I'm actually pro-real establishment. The other people who think that they're pro-establishment are actually just pro-tyranny, pro-scumbaggery. And I can't, that just doesn't fly with me. And speaking of things that don't fly, you know how the United States has this massive no-fly list, right? Well, this is just a random topic, completely off topic, but I was talking to my producer the other day, and the New Zealand government's going to wind up deporting him, or might do. And we thought maybe because he's been the producer of the show for a number of years that he might be on the no-fly list. So we're thinking, man, it would be really funny. What if the New Zealand government came in here, stuck him on a plane, sent him to the United States, and then Homeland Security said, no, we can't let you deport U.S. citizens back to the U.S. They're on the no-fly list. So the draconian Homeland Security would actually prevent Americans from coming back under their own dominion because of their bureaucracy. I thought that would be really hilarious. And we were up to break now in either case. So, ladies and gentlemen, don't you fly anywhere. We'll be right back with Rick Simpson from PhoenixTears.ca. Live from the vodka-soaked news bunker in southern Siberia, bordering with Chechnya, and partying up with people that have legs blown off and stuff. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and napalm explosions, if you lose your sense of humor, you go friggin' nuts. My very special guest is Rick Simpson from PhoenixTears.ca, and we're talking about all the old, we're talking over the break with Adam, our board op, who's going through a little bit of a hard time right now, and I've said it on the times, on the radio many times before, the guys at AFR, oh my God, oh my God, did they have some hard work to do? Like every single day, it's constant, you know, 10, 14 hour days, 6 days a week, unpaid for the most part. Producing me, producing Kevin Barrett, producing Christopher Green and Pete Santilli and all of the other Christy and all these other real great hosts that we've got on the network and things like that. It just takes so much energy to put things together for other people. And I wonder if anybody puts enough energy to put things together for them. That's why I made that ad that runs on American Freedom Radio now, encouraging people to donate to American Freedom Radio and also to volunteer. American Freedom Radio at ymail.com is the email list if you want to send in and volunteer. You know, they'll tutor you, they'll mentor you, they'll teach you how to produce real high quality radio. Okay, Danny Romero's been in the biz and talk radio for close to a decade plus or anything like that. Has the biggest associations with the biggest and best talk radio people in the game, basically, salt of the earth type character. Right. If you want to get involved, I encourage you to do so. And if they're going through harsh times, I know that times must be very harsh indeed. I don't know what it is about me. I'm always trying to help people. And Rick, I told you before the show today about my mate Mikhail. He's actually sitting right here next to me in the studio today. Yeah. We were at another listener's house, Dan's, last night. And Mike had only had 3 hours sleep, hadn't had much water all day, had done like 8-10 hours of painting. It's tough work, eh? And he blacked out, and he fell backwards. Like we're on a balcony, right, with a railing that couldn't have been more than 2 feet off the ground. Kicked his legs right up. Sailed down over the balcony and hit the concrete head first. Good 3 meters. Good 3 meters, 10 feet below.
That's how you end up with the kind of damage that I have. You know, I had the same thing—a head injury—and it put a 6 foot fall, land on your head, and that can ruin your life real quick.
Well, it was incredibly lucky that he was that he passed out and fell off as well, because it was real limp kind of thing. If you know that you're falling, you tense up and the impact affects you more. That's why, ironically, if you're going to get into a car crash, it's actually best if you're the drunk driver, because you're totally limp. Yep. I think that's probably why they made drunk driving illegal, you know, because they love death. I'm just joking. That's a conspiracy theory. But in either case, I consider myself to be the man to go to in a crisis, right? So ran down the bottom there, picked him up, laid him down, and he'd been unconscious for about maybe 30 seconds, and then woke up, and the first thing he says is, "No, I'm fine. It's like, after seeing him fall back, I was like, whoa, yeah, I don't care what you say, bro. We're taking you to the emergency thing now. When it comes to the medical industry, and I will say this, they kill more people than they save. They don't know how to treat disease. They don't know how to treat mental problems. But when it comes to trauma, modern medicine is the bee's knees. You got an arm cut off, finger cut off, head trauma, or broken bones, something like that. You definitely want that emergency room. No amount of herbology or naturopathy or anything like that is gonna cure you from a head gash. All right, so you get in there, you get you some stitches, and you get on out. And I stayed there with him for about maybe 3 hours, I think. Just keep bringing him water and keep talking to him, keep making him laugh and stuff like that. You know, the Patch Adams methodology, you know, you can cure a lot of people with laughter. And, you know, you know me, Rick, I can force a few cackles if I choose.
Yes, you can.
and the nurses and doctors and everything like that. Like my mate Dan, he drove us to the hospital, so and he was about to leave, and I was just saying, "Yeah, man, I'll stay here with him because I know that these doctors and nurses and everything like that, they'll try and give him vaccines, they'll try and pull tubes of his blood and put it on file and do all of this other stuff that we know that they do. You know, they want to give him radiation and all of this other sort of stuff, and he's like, we don't want any of that. So I'm kind of, you know." He's very lucky that his friend is Mr. News, you know. just literally there. I know all the methodologies. I know all their tricks. You know, I made sure to like go onto the wall just across from his bed to read the patient's rights out sheet that you can't be pressured into anything and you have the right to informed consent and everything like that. And just took some mental notes and you know, he came out of there with stitches. And drank a few cups of water, and that's it. Had I not been there, he may well have had been pressured into a tetanus shot, may well have had a full tube of his blood being pulled, and he doesn't like having his blood pulled at all, bro. It freaks him out. You know, he gets faint even if he's healthy. What else was there going on there? They wanted to scan his head, you know, dose him with a bit of radiation and things like that. There was no skull fracture. He wasn't nauseous or vomiting. A 3-meter fall onto his head, and he didn't even so much as suffer a proper concussion, right? Nothing short of a miracle.
Not exactly, Vinny. They proved that, you know, by people that smoke cannabis, just smoking cannabis provides a great level of protection for head injuries. There's a fellow out there who wrote a book. His name is Martin Martinez. He wrote a book called The New Prescription. It's all about cannabis. And he had a motorcycle accident with no helmet. They never thought he'd be right in the head again. But because he was a heavy cannabis user, he healed up very quickly and he came right back to normal. So having the cannabinoids in your system, it is like an invisible protection for head injuries.
Well, it occurs to me that it's an invisible protection for everything. Bob Melliman told me... even against alcohol, damages and destroys brain cells. But what happens if you have ingested cannabis beforehand? The cannabinoids form a protective seal around your brain cells, and they prevent alcohol from damaging them. And this is very interesting because a lot of people say you don't combine alcohol, don't combine cannabis. And what I found, at least from personal experience, and a number of different people that I know that have of course used both at the same time, what happens is if you're really drunk already, and then you start smoking weed, mate, you will go off the rails. You will start feeling sick. You'll get nauseous and stuff like that. That happened to me one time at a dance party. I don't recommend that. But if you smoke before you start drinking and then start consuming, you tend to drink slower and the effects are nowhere near as bad, kind of thing. And in fact, even hangovers are less intense. And it's quite an interesting thing, just the order in which you take them.
Well, it's amazing the difference it makes to drinkers, because I know when I got off the liquor when I was in my mid-30s, you know, before I used to go to a dance or something, before I went to the dance, I would smoke a joint. But, I mean, normally, before I started with the hemp, I would go to a dance, I would drink, Christ, 12 beer, 18 beer, who knows, maybe a 24. You know, I had a capacity for this stuff. But all of a sudden, smoke the joint, go to the dance, dance, have a good time all night, drink 2 beer. Go home, wake up the next day, no hangover, no headaches. I found that to be much better. And it's great for getting people off alcohol and any of these addictive substances. You know, opiates, alcohol, you name it. The oil helps you get you off these substances. And it's the best thing you can do for your body.
Indeed, I had a Maori friend, Dr. Totoku, who was... very much involved in the Maori community, what they call a Maori warden, you know, volunteers who walk the streets like security guards and things like that. Mm-hmm. And she's managed to get a number of her family and friends and just general people she meets on the street off of methamphetamine, off of extreme alcohol abuse, and she just, you know, insists, and if they refuse or anything like that, she'll even roll a joint for them and deliver it around there for them. You know, it's just like, I don't care, man. You know, this is really, really, that's really bad for you. This is really good for you. Here it is. I'm not going to charge you for it or anything. Just take it. Just use it, you know, because I'm concerned about your health care. And it's like, have you noticed that you don't need qualifications in healthcare in order to care for somebody's health?
Quite true, Benny.
You don't. And indeed, if you do have, qualifications in healthcare, I think it's even less likely that you care about people's health.
Well, you know, really, I mean, healthcare workers are really a special breed, and I mean, they should be people that have deep concern and compassion for others. That should be the first prerequisite for anybody working with patients. But unfortunately, that is not the situation we're in today. Because, you know, I mean, the bottom line is, to these doctors, we're just a number, you know, in a way to milk the cow to make more money. That's all it is to them. So I don't consider people like that as being good healthcare, you know, professionals. And I'm sad to say, Vinny, after 25 years of working in a hospital myself, I can actually say that I've only come in contact with maybe three people over all of those years that I would consider to be good healthcare professionals.
Few and far between. And I think Dr. Bill Deagle told me once that if you have the letters MD after your name, you are statistically 11 times more likely to be a serial killer. Not just a murderer, but a serial killer.
Well, all you got to do is give the people the chemo and the radiation. What are you? You're a serial killer.
Well, I was also thinking about this last night. You know, it'd be cool if you could, I don't know, but have some sort of a children's program to teach kids about this. You know, like you could have Tickle Me Chemo or something like that, you know, like a
Tickle Me Elmo, yeah, right, chemo, why not?
You know, he could have a chemo blanket.
We got to start educating the young people to reality. I mean, most of the older people seem to be too brainwashed to accept anything. So this is what I look at, and this is the reason I like to get into these universities and get to these young minds, to wake them up before it's too damn late.
Yeah, I mean, hey, time is short, and I think I had a realization when I was really young, Rick. Time never waits for me. Like, it doesn't slow down when I want it to, or speed up when I want it to, or anything like that. And I deal with time the same way I deal with my relationships with people. If I don't give anything, I don't get anything, or vice versa. So time never waits for me. So I'm never going to wait for time. Time's a waste, and that kind of thing. I always want to do as much as I can right now while I'm still alive. You know, it's like, Vinny, are you still alive right now? Yes, I am. Well, I should be exposing some scumbaggery then, I reckon.
You're right, brother.
I think we prioritize relaxation quite a bit, because it's, I don't know, life's really hard, and I don't think any of us really want to live a harsh and painful and stress-filled life. So in a way, it's actually really, really beneficial to prioritize your relaxation time and things of that nature. But often we do it at the expense of the moment, at the expense of opportunities when we could be doing something that really needs to be done or really productive right now. And I've noticed sometimes, even when you think you're really tired, or even after you've been injured or something, you can still accomplish a heck of a lot, right? I remember this one time, I think I was doing community service after I got busted for dealing when I was much, much younger, and I fell off a 2.5 meter, you know, 8 foot retaining wall on my bicycle, and landed on my head, and the bike was fine, but I was messed up, and my mum wasn't having any of it. Right. Seriously, she just said, I don't care. You still have to ride the 14 kilometers down to the reserve, you know, up and down hills and things like that. You still have to work a full day pulling weeds and chopping wood and maintaining a park and delivering wheelbarrow loads of gravel and everything like that, with a messed up neck and a hurting head and a messed up back and everything like that. And I did it.
Right.
you know, we're all capable of things that we don't think we are. right? It's only whether or not we have to do something often do, is we when we do. Find out how much we can do.
We right. can deal with adversity if we want.
Yeah, if we want to. We'll be right back, or if we have to. We'll be right back after the break with Rick Simpson from PhoenixTears.ca. And I think after the break as well in the second hour, we might be having Jan Irvin from Gnostic Media back in a minute.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, categorized by every day I am hustling like Rick Ross under Operation Pegasus, and the CIA shipped all the drugs in. Speaking of hustling, you know, it was something that was interesting, Rick. The reason why I started dealing when I was young is basically I lost my job as a security guard for kind of an unfair reason. And also my girlfriend left to go back to Japan. She didn't break up with me. She just basically thought that everybody was really racist in New Zealand, and she couldn't handle it for a bit, so she wanted to go back home. And then my flatmate Liam left as well to go. And I was just kind of all alone. And it was the first time I'd ever started using. And what I found was that when I was selling weed to people, they would hang out with me and they would smoke with me and that kind of thing. And I thought these people were my friends. And as soon as I got arrested, I never saw a single one of those people ever again.
They disappear very quickly.
Yeah. They ain't your friends, okay? No more than the guy at the convenience store that you're nice and friendly and chatty with is your friend. If he didn't have a convenience store, you wouldn't take up your own volition to go over and see him and stuff like that, because you're only buying stuff off him, you know? It's a business. And because you're doing something illegal, you perceive that there's some kind of a relationship there, some kind of rapport. But incidentally, I was actually dobbed on, so somebody actually narked on me to the cops. And it was the worst, most horrible experience going through in my life. The disillusionment, the severe depression, the just extreme rage when I just thought my entire life was over. Mm. And, you know, and it actually was. You know, I had a whole life planned out for myself. Like, I want to be a great filmmaker and go to university and film out and be a nice, upstanding citizen and all of that kind of stuff. And when you get the jackboot thugs on you, and you see all their methodologies, and you have that kind of harsh reality of being in the cells alone, and you kind of have some time with their thoughts, nothing's ever the same again.
Well, brother, you are an upstanding citizen. Nobody can take that away from you. But, I mean, well, so what? You sold a little bit of pot. Boy, that makes you a real bad person, doesn't it? So
what, man, you love?
Let's talk about the real drug dealers here. And then the other day I watched a documentary on television. It was funny as hell. Now, here's the American Coast Guard going through the Panama Canal. And the reason they're doing that is because they need a ship between Colombia and Panama, you know, to stop all the drug running. Now, here's the CIA flying airplanes in, loading them with cocaine and flying them back to the United States and addicting the whole damn country. Well, the American Coast Guard is down there patrolling the waters to keep these drugs out of the United States of America. You know, what a pile of BS. And, I mean, the bottom line is, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, they're down there bothering boaters and things like that. I have no doubt about that. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised. They're probably behaving the same as the CIA. The Coast Guard is likely bringing in drugs, too. You know, so the American government, all the governments, they're the drug dealers. It's not the little guy that, you know, smokes a joint or grows a little bit of pot for himself, or if he sells a little bit. That don't make you a bad person. Actually, to me, it makes you a hero.
Well, there were a couple of things that I found very interesting is that I was very naive at the time and believed that police were honest people who just trying to do the right thing and apply the law liberally and sort of and so I was very honest with them. He says, yes, I'm a drug dealer. Yes, I've been selling about an ounce a week for about 8 months or whatever, and here's my bag of weed that I'm going to sell, and here's my personal stash, here's my old stalks from old ounces, and here's my tinfoil and whatever. You know, I gave them everything, and they still made up evidence against me in court.
Well, I mean, these cops are renowned. I mean, they go on, you know, they talk about perjury and all that. Every time I've ever seen a cop testify, every damn time, they've lied. You know, they're the ones that are supposed to be upholding justice. You know, it's so disgusting. And then
they're the ones that are holding justice down.
Right. And the judges are letting them do it.
Because the judges are there to do that exact same thing. And here's the interesting thing about sentencing, right? There's two people in front of me, like when I was being sentenced. First guy, maybe about 55, 58 years old, right? Wearing a moth-eaten cardigan, a former heroin addict. And he's there because he stole a jar of Craig's raspberry jam from the local BP service station, okay? And... right, being prosecuted for that by BP. And he was ordered to pay reparations to BP of $4.15 to replace the jar of Craig's jam. How much did they pay the lawyer to prosecute him? How much time did it take off the court to do this, you know? Thousands of dollars. And the next guy in front of him, he was up for sexual assault of his girlfriend. Resisting arrest and cultivation of three plants, okay? He gets 150 hours community service. Me, I'm up there with 13 grams of cannabis ready for sale. I get 300 hours community service.
Oh, God. Yeah, you're the bad guy.
I was the bad guy. Hey, and I was lucky I didn't go to jail for up to 8 years for a first offense, right? We've got this thing in this country called diversion, which if you have a first offense, you can get off it if it's a minor crime or whatever. But selling pot is considered as serious as manslaughter in this country.
Well, even more serious, Vinny, even more serious. I mean, I'll tell you right now, Vinny, if anybody ever put me in jail over pot, when I got out, I wouldn't want to be the judge that put me there because it would be payback time as far as I'm concerned. You're not going to damn well ruin my life without me coming and ruining yours. You know, they're the criminals. What? We smoke man's oldest known and safest medication that's been smoked and used by civilizations for thousands of years, and we're the bad guy? No, like hell we are. They're the bad guys. They're all in the back pocket of the big money, and the reason they're persecuting us is because the big money don't like us.
I'm for one, grateful that I got arrested and persecuted. Had I not gone through that trauma, had I not gone through that disillusionment, right, I may have lived the entire rest of my life without ever noticing that there was a problem with humanity that needed to be solved and I can actually contribute.
Well, that was the same thing that happened to me, Vinny. I mean, is it because of my injury and everything, when I seen the reality of what this wonderful plant can do, I just couldn't believe that they're not using it. I thought they would instantly jump on the bandwagon. My God, we need to heal people, don't we? And then you give them the information, you give them the evidence, and then they turn around and prosecute you. You know, what a wonderful country. And it's just enough to make me jump right out of my chair and sing, oh, Canada. I mean, this country sucks to high heaven. It's not the country. It's a beautiful country, but it is run by nothing but criminals. And I don't know what's wrong with the Canadian people. Why the hell they won't get off their asses and demand something better?
Well, see, and it's not just the Canadian people, it's the New Zealand people, it's the American people, it's the people infinitum plural. What is the difference between somebody who gets messed around and disillusioned and chooses to accept it to, say, people like you and I, Rick, who have that exact same experience that many, many others have had, and then instead of letting it kill us, we instead devote our lives to saving and preserving human life. What is the difference between those people and us? I don't know what it is.
Well, I mean, if what took place with you was the cause of you doing what you're doing today And the same with me. If it's the cause of what I'm doing today, I'm like you. I have no regrets. Because I think I'm doing the most important thing that I've ever done in my life. And I believe you're doing the same.
Yeah, this reminds me of something Chris Green asked me. Is Vinny, if December 21st, 2012 was the end of the world, would you start doing anything different? And I was like, you know what? No. I think I'm doing the most important stuff I could ever conceivably do, the most enjoyable thing that I've ever done. Wouldn't change a thing. What? No. What? The world's ending, therefore I'm going to stop enjoying myself and stop doing the right thing?
Please. I wish they would stop coming up with this world-ending nonsense. It's like I said, I lived through the end of the world too many times, brother. You know, it gets lame after a while.
Yeah, the end of the world is getting old, man.
Yeah, we've heard it too often. And, I think that this stuff is just put out there for distractions. You know, look, we're going to get hit by a planet. The world is going to end. It scares everyone. It scares some people. Me, I just ignore it all, laugh at it, and that's Mayan calendar. I've been telling people for a long time, I said, this Mayan calendar is just a bunch of nonsense. You know, we probably are entering a new age of enlightenment, and it's high damn time, but it's not going to be the end of the world.
Yeah, well, incidentally, we're going to have Jan Irvin on after the break. He's a bit of an advocate of yours as well, and we talk with him. On December 21st, 2012, and actually goes through what's in the Mayan calendar. You know what the Mayan calendar predicted for December 21st, 2012, and the whole prediction?
Mm-hmm.
A new king would be crowned. And that's it.
Well, did you get a crown? I didn't get one.
No.
Nah, what happened?
You see, but the thing is, people make up this distortion and stuff like that. They make an entire industry off of doomsday propaganda, don't you think? And you know what happened to people back in the day if they made predictions that didn't pan out? They got stoned to death, and not in a marijuana kind of way. Rick, thank you very much for your time here tonight.
It was a pleasure, Vinny, as always, brother, and I'm happy to come on anytime I'm available.
Yeah, but we'll talk over the break as well, and maybe Jan Irvin might want to have a chat with you in the next break. We'll see. All right.
Okay, brother.
Thank you very much. If this is it. Otherwise, tune in after the break, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll at the very least have Jan Irvin from Gnostic Media. He cuts off fallacies like a professional castrator. He's quite an amazing guy. We'll be right back.